Hi, everyone. This was initially just a note for myself, but I liked it so much that I wanted to share it. So that's why I'm making this intro, because it's not in the note, because it wasn't meant to be shared. And if you want a little insight into my process, this is it. I tried writing down a bunch of stuff. Although I do write, I find it tedious and inefficient and time-consuming. This is how I think, by talking. And if there's no one to talk to, or I don't think it's good enough to waste anybody's time with, I just talk to myself. So, this is one of those talks, with just some of the more rambly parts cut out to boil it down to its essence. Enjoy.
All right, so ideas for today's concept number one. The thing versus the illusion of the thing. That's an important one. It's the main choice people have between real and illusionary. What is real? What is illusionary? An illusion is based on falsehood. It's the impression that something is true. Why do people choose illusions versus the real thing? Why would anybody do that? Well, it's quite advantageous. In some situations, concept number two, people choose the illusion of the thing first where the thing is not available or it's not available to them. Option number three is that it's possible, available, but it costs an enormous amount of resources for them to obtain. It's extremely difficult, so it's not worth it. In all these cases, when you can't get the thing, the next best thing you can get is the illusion of the thing. Concept number three. Why would people come to the conclusion that something is not available when it actually is? Problem is where people think that something is unavailable to them when it actually is. Or the price tag, in terms of cost to obtain, is way higher than it actually is. We get into all sorts of problems here. People misjudge what is available to them and at what cost. Now, why would they do that? Error this evaluation. Concept number, what are we at now? Four? Well, it has to do with people's childhoods. And from the lens of power, the problem is that parents either mistakenly teach their children that they have way more power than they actually have, or that they can't obtain the power they actually need to solve a problem. I'm going to give examples of the two main power-related mistakes, power dynamics mistakes in parenting. Both originate from where could children learn how to get the thing, how to solve a problem, how to overcome an obstacle, how to fulfill a need or want that they have. Well, they learn it from their parents. How is a parent supposed to teach the kid to get the thing if they don't know themselves how to get the thing? Well, they can't. So then the kid wants the thing, and what? Is the parent supposed to say, hey kid, I know you want the thing, and this is where it splits into two possibilities. The parent, to avoid losing face, losing authority with their child, losing the position of power and respect by admitting that they don't know how to get the thing, but it is knowable, it's just that they don't know it. The parent says, oh, Dad, that's easy, man. There's nothing to teach, really. It's so simple, you just have to do it. It's like, I didn't have to show you how to place your feet in order to walk. You just need to, just do it. If you don't do it, it's because you don't want it enough. And hey, kid, that's on you. That's option number one. This is pretending that they have way too much power than they actually do. Pretending that getting the thing is within their grasp, even though it isn't, because they lack very important skills and notions and principles. The second option is to pretend that the thing is unachievable for the child or unachievable in general. Hey kid, that thing that you want, I would love to have that too. And as you know, I'm all powerful and all knowing, but even I don't have that. That's not for us to have. That is impossible. What you want is impossible. So you better settle down and stop looking for it, wishing for it. Which, of course, the kid doesn't, because it's in our nature to want what we want and to need what we need. But consciously, the child, trying to please their parents, because we're all conditioned to evolutionarily, acts as if the thing is impossible to obtain, or it's impossible for them to obtain. And this is the archetype of the devouring mother that sabotages her children by doing everything for them, the bulldozer parent, as it's called. So it's not, hey, it's impossible to get the thing. It's actually impossible for you. Let me do it for you. This is learned helplessness. I want to feel less helpless as a parent because I can't get the thing either, or because I want to feel powerful as a parent, providing what it is you need. I want to feel powerful and important to you, and I want to deal with the anxiety of you eventually leaving me and me ending up alone, because you won't need me anymore. So as long as I don't teach you what it is you need to get the thing yourself, you'll always need me to get the thing for you. So of course, happens mostly subconsciously. So those are the two types. Now, what is there to do about it? Because what I just described to you, what happens, but stories are the vehicles by which all this gets transmitted and gets installed. So we create stories, the parents create stories that they tell to the children in everyday life. It doesn't have to be a, let's sit down, let me tell you a story. They tell the story by their own actions and by their every interaction with the child. They create this narrative, they create this story that says this thing is impossible to get. This thing is very hard to get. You need somebody else to provide it for you. Or this thing is so easy to get that you should have no problem getting it yourself. And if you can't, well, there's something wrong with you. So these stories about what is possible, impossible, what is achievable and not achievable, these stories get passed to the child and get installed. It's like a module, like an operating system update. Later, we need to fix these stories. And first, we need to determine which stories we actually need to fix. And stories fall into three categories. We have our true stories, we have our false stories, and we have our fictional stories. A fictional is a combination of true and false, but they're true where it matters and false where it doesn't matter. And fictional stories are very, very important, and they're a very, very important concept and very, very important tool, because the fictional stories are not false, not entirely. They contain the same archetype, same true archetypes, which are now even more evidenced as being true because of the rest of the stuff that isn't true around them. Like, if the archetype of the hero who goes into the underworld to save the village, slays the dragon of chaos and comes back, like that's a very basic archetype. The fact that an archetype is featured in a fictional stories where there's a lot of things that do not correspond to current physical reality, to our reality, but to a different reality in which, for example, there are wizards who fly around on brooms and they go to wizard schools and they play something called Quidditch, like in Harry Potter. The same hero archetype is present in the world of Harry Potter, because Harry Potter is the hero. That makes the hero archetype not false, because there's no such thing as wizards. It makes it ultra true. extra truth, hyper truth. That is what archetypes are. They are hyper truths. Because it's so true that it's true even in a world where a bunch of other stuff that we know is true isn't. This is still true. Do you know how true that is? That is hyper truth. So we have a problem. We have some stories installed that are not true. They're not fictional. They are actually false. They contain false elements. That's how you define a false story. And what I mean by false, isn't Harry Potter false because there's no such thing as wizards? No, because the story is actually not about wizards. The story is about heroes. A hero. And that is true. And the way in which that hero behaves is true. Now, if I were to tell you a story, and it wouldn't even be fictional, it wouldn't be anything about wizards, it would be about business, right? The most, like, down-to-earth thing you can imagine. But the story would be about how I got to where I wanted to go, and I became a successful businessman by being a jerk to absolutely everyone I ever met, in all circumstances. Now, you know instinctively that that story is false. Right? You might not even have a rational, workable language explanation for it, but your intuition tells you it's false. Like, you can't succeed if you do that. You might win some games, short term, but people who do this get it in the end. That's another archetype. The fact that you can't really succeed across time and win a lot of games consistently across time if you cheat and you don't play by the rules and you do not offer anything of value and all you do is take, 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 take. So what we need to do as philosophy practitioners is to debug the stories, the false stories. Find which stories are false, replace them with true stories, and Bob is your uncle. So the first one would be this standard of what is possible and what is not possible. And we've all inherited a bunch of stories from our parents and our ancestors, actually, because this, it's not just our parents. Another important concept. These stories don't just come from our parents. They come from their parents as well, and their our grandparents and grand-grandparents, and they've been transmitted as memes, generational memes, inside of families, tribes, and societies. The standard of what is possible and what is not possible in the world, we need to change it to, and there's a lot of stories about that, we need to change them and replace them with a single story. That anything that is not physically impossible, that does not defy the very laws of physics of the universe, the reality we live in, is possible. And even some of the stuff that seems to defy the laws is possible. But there you need to be careful, because really need to make sure to check your math, all that one. Like, people thought it wouldn't be possible to fly until it was. A lot of the stuff that was science fiction in the past is now just science. It was fiction until somebody got to do it. Like, flying around in metal machines, that was fiction until they did it. Right? Going into space, fiction until they did it. And so this needs to be the new perfect standard. This is one of the main jobs of the practical personal philosopher, is to restate, to repair perfect standards. So why do people choose the illusion of the thing instead of the thing? Because they mistakenly were convinced by the stories installed through their lineage, stories they inherited, that something was either not possible at all, not possible for them, possible but extremely hard, so they should let somebody else do it or have it. And if they don't have someone to provide it, they cannot provide it for themselves. Or something was so easy that it's trivial and they need to pretend like they have it. Otherwise, there's something wrong with them. So they create the illusion of the thing to protect themselves from looking like failures because they don't have the thing and everyone should have the thing. Good example of this is when children learn how to study. Like we act as if studying is easy and learning is easy. No, most of us don't know how to learn. Most of us adults do not know how to learn because we weren't given an education. We were given training on specific subjects. So education is actually how to learn anything when you need to learn it, no matter the subject. There's some specific techniques and principles that you need to apply to learn any skill you need to learn if you want or need to learn it. And we act as if, like, yeah, anybody, just go to school, man. Like, that's what school is for. They're going to teach you things. Well, being taught something, never mind the manner in which that is done, which is deplorable in most schools today. Being taught something and learning something are two different things. And schools don't teach you to learn. Because if they did, guess what? You wouldn't need them. So schools are guilty of the self-same sin. A sin is an intentional mistake. So schools would make themselves obsolete by actually teaching you the only thing that needs to be taught is how to teach yourself, how to learn anything. Because today, we live in an age where information is readily available. Everyone has the whole of human knowledge at their fingertips, in their pocket, most of the day in a little glass box called a phone. The internet is absolutely teeming with videos, not just written knowledge, like actual skill demonstrations on how to do basically anything at this point. And if it can't give you the information directly, then it can sure as hell connect you with somebody who can. So schools, not needed anymore. All right, this is it. This is the frame.